Now, Mary Poppins famously sang that a spoonful of sugar might help the medicine go down. But a British lecturer in pure mathematics has reached the conclusion that that song should instead read, "A spoonful of custard can help the high-level maths lessons go down." It seems improbable, but she's devoted an entire new book to it. That book is called Cakes, Custard and Category Theory, and it's one part maths primer, one part cookbook. As the publisher puts it, Mobius Bagels, Euclid's Flourless Chocolate Cake, this is maths, but not as you know it. I feel like I have so much to learn, so I'm pleased to be joined from the Chicago studio by Eugenia Cheng. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Eugenia, tell us about what brought you to the idea of combining custard and mathematics.
Well, I love maths, and I also love custard. And unfortunately, most people love custard more than they love maths. But I realized that making custard, for me, encapsulates some of the principles of mathematics, oddly enough. And I thought, well, why don't I bring these two things together so that people have some more positive associations with maths?
Is this just stealth? Are you like the witch in Hansel and Gretel?
Exactly like the witch in Hansel and Gretel, yes.
You've basically just covered the outside of your house with lollies and you're luring us in.
No, that's not it at all. I have been using food to teach quite complicated mathematical concepts to my students for some years now. And it all started in a lecture when I stirred some blueberry jam into yogurt to demonstrate an aspect of, believe it or not, number theory. And they loved it so much. And I loved it too, because frankly, I kind of always wanted to be on a cooking show. And then I just thought, well, how about I do this more if I can? And so I started realizing that practically every mathematical concept I could think of, that's a slight exaggeration, maybe, could be explained using food. And it was not only much more fun than usual, because unfortunately maths lectures can, not when I give them, but they can be a bit boring. But also it makes it more memorable and it gives everybody something delicious that they can associate with something that would otherwise be awfully dry and abstract.
All right, so before we get into some other examples, I'm not going to let you barrel past those blueberries in the yogurt. What does that tell us about number theory?
The blueberries in the yogurt tell us that if you take the whole numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on, and if you just decide you want to include the square root of 2, which you may or may not remember is an irrational number, which means that it's not a whole number, it's not a fraction, it's not anything particularly sensible. If you throw that in, that's an advanced thing to do in number theory, and it creates a very interesting thing that's like blueberry yogurt, because when you stir it up, some of the yogurt will go purple, because the jam parts will stir in with the yogurt and make it purple. But there'll also be those blobs of blueberry that will just sit there no matter how much you stir them. And that's the thing that my students kept forgetting, that some of it would go purple and some of it would stay as blobs.
So now I am fascinated by this because it does seem to go a little bit beyond just food analogy. I don't know. I remember learning maths at school and it was, you know, Peter is on a train going this speed in this direction and Julie's on a train going the other direction, and the analogy is supposed to lure you in. But you seem to be using food in a slightly more complicated way than that.
I hope so, because the thing about those kind of word problems that you just mentioned from school is that they are very typical of a way of, and I think that's more like the witch in Hansel and Gretel, of making it look like maths is relevant to daily life. And in fact, my aunt told me one that she remembered from school, which consisted of having some hens, some chickens and some rabbits in a cage, and you're told how many feet there are, and you're supposed to deduce from the number of feet how many chickens and rabbits there are. Now, that's completely absurd, because first of all, who would keep chickens and rabbits in a cage together? And secondly, when would you ever count their feet in order to work out how many animals there were? And so I think that that makes the whole situation worse, because you're pretending like it's relevant to real life, but actually it's a completely contrived situation, and missing the point, which is that maths is useful to daily life, but to me, what's really great about maths, it's that it gives you a way of thinking logically about everything, and that helps with understanding practically anything except people who aren't very logical.
There is something too about the way we teach cooking to children and the kind of mathematical undertones of that. Follow these instructions, add this to this to this to get this result.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we teach maths like that to children as well. Follow these instructions, do that, and then you're supposed to get the right answer. And if you do it a bit wrong, someone goes, nope, you're wrong. And that's very upsetting, I think. But I think surely
in maths there is right and wrong. I mean, it's the kind of cooking that's more like baking, where it can go tragically wrong. You're not like Jamie Oliver and saying, you know, make it up as you go along and put a dollop of this and a...
Well, you know what the secret is, that actually maths at a higher level is much more like making it up as you go along. And that's why I wrote this book, because I think it's sad that most people never get to see that. All they ever get to see is that you're right or wrong. You have to pass these exams. Nope, 6 out of 10, bye. Whereas when you get to a research level, you go, oh, I'm going to see what I can make up and see what will happen.
And that openness to trial and error as a kind of process to approaching things is important to cooking, I imagine, also to maths.
Oh, yes. There's a famous thing that happened with Euclid and geometry, where they were trying to prove, and I mentioned this in the book, they were trying to prove the parallel postulate about parallel lines, and they couldn't prove it. So they thought, well, let's just suppose it's not true and see what terrible thing will go wrong. And nothing went wrong. They just discovered new kinds of geometry. And I actually did this recently when I have a recipe for gluten-free brownies in the book, which I came up with myself. But recently, I came up with another recipe for gluten-free brownies entirely by mistake, just because I got very distracted when I was making brownies and I entirely forgot to put the flour in. And I didn't remember until I'd put it in the oven. I thought, oh no, I forgot to put the flour in. What's going to happen? And I took them out and they were delicious. And maths is like that too. And I always say to my, I've been saying to my students all semester, you can make any rules you want. Maths doesn't have to be about other people imposing rules on you. You can make up your own rules as long as you follow them. And the worst thing that will happen is that you'll come up with a contradiction and then your whole world will implode. But that's okay. So it's like when you're cooking, it might go wrong, but the worst will happen is maybe your cake will fall flat or something, but it might be a delicious, different thing that you weren't expecting.
I love that you give the example of Euclid. Have you been able to find out whether there were any of the kind of great mathematicians through history were keen cooks?
Oh, I haven't checked that out. I know.
I just wondered Euclid might have had an incredible meringue recipe or something.
Yeah, maybe that's hidden in the margin of one of his books.
You know, the Pythagoras cocktail book. I would definitely read that, because one of the nice things about this book is you illustrate your theory in practice. You get to write the cookbook you always wanted to write with some actual recipes and tease them out as examples of mathematical theory. Talk us through the raw chocolate cookie.
Oh, the raw chocolate cookie is something that I came up with when I was experimenting with raw food. And it all started because I started making my own chocolate. I love chocolate. My only personal food rule is that every morning the first thing I eat is always chocolate. So I went to a chocolate making workshop, and the lady who ran it was so extraordinarily beautiful. Her skin glowed. She was as healthy as anything. And she said that she ate around 100 grams of raw chocolate every day. And I thought, I want to do that. Can I be that beautiful if I eat 100 grams of raw chocolate?
So you happily saw a causal link? Rather than just correlation.
Now, well, I thought, here's something that I have to test. More evidence must be obtained.
Right, you had a responsibility as a mathematician.
Exactly. And so I tried making raw chocolate, and then I thought about making other raw chocolate foods, such as these raw cookies. Now, raw cookies, it's a contradiction in terms, because a cookie is, well, it's cooked, and raw means it's not cooked. But there are several mathematical principles here. One thing is that it's not the inherent characteristics that make them a cookie, but it's the role that they play in your life. And the role that cookies play in my life, anyway, is that they are delicious, they make me happy, they're a snack, they go with my coffee, and things like that. And that's what these chocolate things do. And so they're from all raw ingredients, very easy. You just chuck the whole lot in a food processor and roll it out. And so the sense in which they're the same as cookies is the role they play, not how they're made. And mathematics looks a lot at the way in which we consider things to be the same, because that's actually very subtle. When you say that something equals something else, well, nothing equals anything except itself. You know, one doesn't equal anything except one, and X doesn't equal anything as X, and I don't equal anything except me. So in fact, equations are all really boring. What's the point of equations, of just saying that something is the same as something else? What's really interesting is saying, well, this thing isn't exactly the same as something else, but if I view it in a certain light, then it is somehow equivalent. And that's the point of those raw chocolate cookies. They're not the same as cookies, but viewed from the point of view of the role that they play in making my life delicious, then they are pretty much the same.
I don't know if you're making me a better mathematician right now or if you're just making me hungry, but something is working.
Maybe it's the same thing.
There you go.
Maybe that's all it takes.
Oh, see, now that's either very profound or very sneaky. I am interested to note you're also quite an accomplished musician, and so you've done a lot of thinking about the ways in which maths echoes musical components of our life.
Yes, and for me, maths is about thinking about what works logically. Not because everything works logically, as I already said, but because of the things that do work logically can be separated out. They can be separated from the things that don't work logically. So, for example, chocolate is very delicious, but at a certain point, I don't know why it makes me quite as happy as it does. I know which kinds of chocolate make me more happy than others and why, but why it makes me quite so ecstatically happy, I don't know. And it's the same with music, that you can analyze interesting structures in the music and you can look at the harmony and you can look at how it's amazing that there are just 12 notes and there are so many things you can do with them just by putting them together in different ways. And it's interesting to look at how different composers have put them together. But at a certain point, you can't really explain in the end why this particular music will just make me cry instantly.
Just as we finish up, I was delighted to see that in your book you managed then to kind of close off that circle, that mathematical equation, and equate music to maths to puff pastry.
Puff pastry is amazing because you take very small number of ingredients, just flour and butter, but the way you put them together is so fantastically complicated. You get something that's extraordinary. It's like magic. The first time I made it, I stared at the oven the whole time it was cooking, watching it rise higher and higher with all those amazing delicate layers just from flour and butter. And with music, it's the same. You just have those 12 notes, but the things that people have created from them that are just overwhelmingly exciting. I want people to see that maths is like that too, that you take some simple things and you can create these incredible structures and landscapes of ideas in your head. I also think that just like with puff pastry and with music, you can appreciate it even if you can't do it yourself. You can eat puff pastry even if you can't make it. You can listen to music even if you can't play it. And the reason I wrote this book is because I strongly believe that you can also appreciate maths even if you can't actually do it.
Eugenia Cheng, you give me a sense of optimism and sheer panic, but your book makes me want to go and try and work out those puzzles. The book is called Cakes, Custard and Category Theory, Easy Recipes for Understanding Complex Maths, and I assure you that it is an entertaining and delicious read, whether you're a maths whiz or an arithmophobe. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eugenia.
Thank you.
Of course, it is worth noting that there are some people out there who are as frightened of the kitchen as they are of the spreadsheet, so maybe this book's just not for them. You're listening to Blueprint for Living on RN with me, Michael Williams. Coming up, forget safety, forget functionality. Don't you want your new car just to look cool and to feel like it belongs to the future? We're talking car design for the 21st century.